Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the programme tonight, get set for the big Karnataka election. The Election Commission makes a huge announcement. Elections on the 10th of May. This comes on a day when the Congress says that Rahul Gandhi, in an act of defiance, will start his election campaign in Kollar. That's the same place where he made remarks for which he's been convicted of defamation and faces 2 years in jail. That legal challenge of the Congress, which they say they will do, that's yet to take place. Money Power, also on show today. Video emerges of the senior Congress leader DK Shivkumar showering 500 rupee notes on supporters at a rally. The BJP has condemned this. On the show tonight, the senior JDS leader HD Kumaraswamy, and then our deep dive into Karnataka ahead of these elections with top political leaders from all the three main parties, the BJP, the JDS and the Congress, also the Aam Aadmi Party. So four parties, the Aam Aadmi Party looking to make a bit of a mark in Karnataka this time around. Some very special poll panels. But what we're going to do right up on the top of this program, I'm joined by a very special guest, Mr. H.D. Kumaraswamy, the senior leader of the JDS, one of the key players going into these Karnataka elections. Thanks, sir, very much for being with us. Firstly, your reaction to the news, in a sense of the day, Rahul Gandhi, in an act of defiance, says that he's going to hold a rally in Kollar. That is the place where he got into so many troubles. He could be jailed for up to 2 years. Your thoughts on that, sir?
No, all regional, all national parties, already they started their campaigning in Karnataka from last 1 month. Even BJP, Honorable Prime Minister and Honorable Home Minister, they also regularly visiting Karnataka and campaigning for the party. As usual, Rahul Gandhi also is coming to Karnataka on 5th. I heard from the news media friends. But these are natural courses, all leaders will come. I'm not bothered about who will come here to campaign for their parties. Whatever my responsibility is there, for that actually I'm looking after.
All right, not bothered about that big announcement by Rahul Gandhi there. Let's talk a little bit more about the Congress. The Karnataka Congress Chief DK Shivkumar was seen showering currency notes on a crowd during a roadshow. I think it was yesterday. Again, is this at one level what, you know, politics in Karnataka, the election campaign is going to be, you know, money being showered besides a whole lot of other things? Your reaction to that?
These are all actually these senior leaders, how to behave in the public. At least common sense, if it is not there, then unnecessarily this kind of embarrassment they have to, actually because of their fault, they have to face it.
Now, you know, just talking again about Mr. Shivkumar, I mean, he's seen to be a possible chief ministerial candidate of the Congress. He's been campaigning extensively in Mandya, which is, you know, a stronghold of the powerful Vokaliga community that you represent. Is that an area of concern? The Congress, particularly Mr. Shivkumar, in the Mandya region, making inroads into your core base?
I know Congress friends, they try to disturb the stronghold of JDS areas. Not only Congress friends, even BJP also, they are trying to disturb JDS strength in those areas. But according to me, our whatever old Mysore area, people are totally solidly they supporting JDS. Whoever going to express their views about to demolish or to strengthen, weaken our strength in that area, people will not going to oblige those words who these two national parties trying to destabilize our strength in those areas.
Sir, the Karnataka cabinet's decision to remove 4% reservations in jobs and educational institutions for Muslims under the OBC quota, then shifting them to a different pool. Some would say that, you know, that's a fairly decisive attempt by the BJP to build on a Hindutva narrative. Do you believe that that Hindutva narrative, which is what the BJP will be pushing, is something that that might actually be a huge threat, not just for you, the Congress as well, that that's dominant?
In Karnataka, about the Hindutva issue, if they trying to introduce forcibly, it will not going to affect on the voters. Whatever decision taken by this government previous 2-3 days back about the reservation issues, that is only to bring controversy between Veer Shaiva and Wakalika community and Muslim community. For that, actually, I congratulate Muslim community. They protesting this your reservation issue with patiently. I congratulate them. They have not given any scope for any controversy or any in between these communities to disturb the day-to-day life.
Sure.
Because these BJP friends, they wanted to create controversy by abolishing 4% reservation what now these minorities are getting. For that, actually, they are removing that 4% and
yes,
distributing those 4% to Veer Shaiva and Wakalikas. Their main intention was to disturb the Sarva Janangada Shantiya Tota of Kuempu in Karnataka. In that, actually, they failed.
Do you, but still, sir, I mean, just to talk about the BJP's, Hindutva narrative, do you believe that polarizing issues such as, from a national level, the entire issue of Veer Savarkar in Karnataka, the issue of Tipu, the issue of wearing hijab in educational institutions, that'll have key factors in the Karnataka election?
In Karnataka, whether Savarkar issue or Tipu issue, nobody will bother. I know actually several times these BJP friends, even running the government from last 3 years, they are not giving any good administration. Even like regarding development work also, they forgotten. They only raising these kind of silly issues to disturb the communities. For that, actually, they are trying from last three years, but it will not going to affect on the common man, and they were going to fail by bringing these kind of issues in the mainstream, and for that, Karnataka's will going to teach a lesson to these BJP friends.
In Mr. Kumaraswamy, in 2018, you'd come to power with the Congress, and then, of course, there was disaster for that political formation. There were dissenters within the formation. They crossed over to the BJP. The BJP came to power. Just talking about the JDS now, because you aren't with the Congress presently, do you think you can keep your flock together, particularly in the context of a close election, if it boils down to that?
Here in this election, our party's main goal is to reach 123 by the blessing of Karnatakas and to form the government on our own. Several developments took place from last 3.5 years. How these BJP friends run the government, how the people are very much disgusted about the BJP's performance in Karnataka. On that context, I will tell you, people badly needed regional party in this election in Karnataka.
But sir, do you foresee a post-poll alliance with the Congress? You've allied with them in the past?
That question will not arise. This time we will fight election on our own, and we will going to form the government on our own with the blessing of Karnatakas.
So we'll wait for the results before we ask you that question again. Sir, in I think it was December, Mr. Devegowda had praised the Home Minister, Amit Shah, calling him active and brilliant. How would you respond to those who say that while you've been close to the Congress in the past, it's not that you're necessarily very distant from the BJP? I ask this in a potential context of a close election.
We are again, both the parties, national parties, we are fighting against them. What Devegowda praised about the Home Minister in Mandya, in Milk Federation function, for that actually he has given a certificate for Devegowda, that he is in the public meeting of BJP, he given a certificate to Devegowda and Janata Dal, that ATM of Karnataka, that is the certificate given by this Honorable Home Minister. How Devegowda actually praised the Home Minister, for that actually what actually certificate he has given to Devegowda, everybody laughing about Home Minister's attitude.
Sir, are you encouraged by the fact that no incumbent government has returned to power since 1985 in Karnataka?
Definitely, yes. Exactly. Even 1989, then 2004, then 2013, people are fed up with the government who have failed in their duties. For that, actually, they have changed the system. Same thing will happen now also in this election.
So, Mr. Kumaraswamy, you know, the flip side of looking at that is that no chief minister has actually completed two full terms since the 1980s. So even if you do come to power, you don't end up retaining it. Is that also not a concern for you? I mean, you can say the question is premature, but it is a reality, it appears, in Karnataka politics for the last 30 years.
No, several problem is there, I will agree. In Karnataka, people are very much intelligent. How they have to take the decision with silently, they will take their own decisions. That's why actually here in Karnataka, several leaders who run the government, whatever they praising that we have done a good, marvelous job, whatever they given publicity, people ultimately they decide that they will give the marks, how much that government's performance. On that basis, they decide to choose next systems in this democracy.
So there are many who would say, and it's statistically relevant, that despite whatever issue that all of you raise, whether it's the issue of, for example, corruption in Karnataka, which is an important election theme, or for the BJP, the entire issue of Hindutva, it is caste arithmetic which will determine the outcome of this election. Do you believe that, I do realize that among the Vokaligas, the JDS is dominant, but do you see a threat from, say, the Congress, which has a strong following among the Ahindas, in making inroads in the Vokaliga vote bank?
Whatever caste politics is actually trying to get the benefit by these Congress friends, they will not achieve in this caste system. Whatever OBC issue, whatever Vokaliga issue, people are intelligent here. That's why I'm telling you, Congress real ground reality strength, they can't cross 75-80 seats. According to me, from last 10-15 years political development analysis, if we predict, Congress real strength is only 75 seats. With very hard work and all unitedly, if they fought, they may reach 70-75 seats. That's all.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir, for being with us. H.D. Kumaraswamy, the former Chief Minister of Karnataka over there. We're going to open up this debate now. I'm going to introduce our panelists. I've got a very special guest and a close friend, T.M. Veeraraghav, Executive Editor at BQ Prime. That's our sister network, and a former colleague here at NDTV. Welcome back. We're also joined by Smita Prakash, the editor of ANI, M. Nagaraj Yadav, the MLC and spokesperson of the Congress Party with us, Nasser Hussain of the JDS, Mohan Vishwa of the BJP, also joined by Professor Narendra Pani and Brajesh Kalappa of the Aam Aadmi Party. We have a long debate. We're going to go on till about 10 o'clock or so. Karnataka, the big focus. Mr. Mohan Vishwa, let me come to you first. Rahul Gandhi, it appears now, according to DK Shivkumar, is going to be campaigning first from Kolar. That's where he got into all sorts of trouble in the past. An act of defiance, some would say, but do you not believe that, it's a pretty strong political message?
See, Vishnu, he is our star pracharak. Let him come to Karnataka as many times as possible. And he has paid for what he has done in the Kolar in last 2019 election campaign. Let him come, not an issue. So let him come to Karnataka and do campaign the way he wants. And when he comes to Karnataka, before starting campaign, he should answer certain questions, okay? Why did DK Shivkumar, who is out on bail, who was in CR jail on a corruption charges, has been made as KPCC president? The second question is, why did Mr. Mohammed Harris Nalpad, who has been arrested by police, put in the jail for 2 months for bashing a guy in UP city to the core? And why, the third question he should answer is, Congress Karnataka is darwaza, gar ek darwaza anek. They have some 40 doors. You have Siddaramaiah fighting internally, you have DK Shivkumar fighting internally, you have MB Patil fighting internally, and you had Jeep Parmeshwara, who recently said there are 13 CM candidates within the Congress in Karnataka, and you have Zamir Ahmad Khan. So these are the questions Mr. Rahul Gandhi should answer in his Kolar rally So let him answer that, then do his campaign. We don't have any issues. Let them bring their whole bunch of national leaders. Let them campaign over here. Let them answer all these questions and let them start campaigning. We don't have any issues.
All right, Mr. Nagaraj Yadav, you had a point to make. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I just now heard the BJP spokesman speaking about Nalpad or something about. Now the Karnataka is going for election 2023 on the basis of 4 years of performance of Karnataka state BJP government today. It is well known everywhere. The whole country was talking about 40% commission. Recently, Viripakshappa MLA, 8 crore rupees was caught. And he was not able to, the state government was not able to arrest him for 5 days after the bail was given to him. He was on the TV to say that I was well comfortable sitting at home. This is the kind of administration they've been doing it. Any corruption allegation was made, not only by a political party, it was made by the contractors association, which is a registered organization of 2.5 lakh contractors in that organization. We have also seen how many contractors have committed suicide today. One is that one. The second thing, you are in the recent past, you have seen how the polarization of politics, they tried to do it, whether in the name of halal, or in the name of azan, or in the name of hijab, or any kind of thing polarization, they tried doing it. They have come to the ultimate to say that, remove the 4% reservation of Muslims, and put them to compete with the EWSU category of Brahmin and upper classes and all that today. This kind of an administration is done. They don't believe in social justice. They don't believe in the Constitution of India. They don't believe in the
democracy. Okay, sir, just hold on 1 second. You've raised a lot of points. I think we need to get into a lot of those points. I'll come to that. Veeraraghav, the entire issue of corruption, is this going to be a dominant theme?
I think it's a very important theme. In terms of grassroots level anti-incumbency, Vishnu, it's there. Mm. I think you don't need me to say it. You had the Home Minister come down and say, look, distance myself from my own state government and say that give Yediyurappa and Prime Minister Modi another chance, we'll give you a corruption-free government. So I don't think any of us need to declare that. The point is that caste arithmetic and that social coalition and that caste affinity going to overpower corruption?
And
can the Congress build a narrative?
And your answer to that?
I don't know. You'll have to wait for the results because this is a state which the social coalitions have held out.
Yes, they have. And
corruption is not a new issue. I can tell you, Vishnu, way back in 2006-07 when we used to go to cover elections, it was Andhra and Karnataka which defined the kind of money. The money that you see D.K. Shivkumar throw around today was thrown by every politician around the last 10-12 years. I mean, and you will see that these two states in many ways sort of brought in this money, power and politics. I mean, like just throwing away money in politics game completely into the system.
Professor Narendra Pani, the issues, whether it's a Hindutva agenda, whether it's the issue of corruption or anything else versus caste arithmetic in these elections, what do you believe will be the dominant factor?
I think we tend to think of caste as too static a category, as if they're identifying with political parties for time to come. I think there's much greater variability in it. There's much later fluctuations. Yes, some castes do stay, do believe in particular parties and with a much greater certainty than others. For instance, the Wakiligas and Mr. Kumaraswamy's party are very tightly sort of enmeshed, and they stand loyal to each other through thick and thin between elections as well. But in other cases, that's not true. The Lingayats used to be with the Congress. They moved to the BJP. But now there are distinct signs that they are not too happy with the BJP. Part of it is the reservations. Part of it is a possible conflict between the RSS and the Lingayat Matas. So there are issues there which the elections will help clarify. But I think looking at caste in too mathematical a sense is actually a weakness. You're really seeing it a much more dynamic process. I think what is more important is that we must keep in mind that there are actually two different elections being fought, at least two different elections being fought in Karnataka. One is the election where and both are bipolar. One is the election between the JDS and the Congress in Old Mysore region, and the other is between the BJP and the Congress elsewhere.
Right.
And it depends on how those dynamics work out. And right now, the Congress seems to be benefiting from the grassroots. At least that's what the grassroots indicators suggest. But it's a long time to go. And JDS will have an additional strength coming in when the candidates are announced, because they have the ability to reach out to candidates who have been ignored by the other two major parties. So it's an interesting situation that could emerge.
No, it is absolutely. And I take your point that the caste equations are dynamic and they would keep evolving over the next couple of months. Smita Prakash, for the BJP, going into these elections, is there a sense that, look, this is going to be much, much closer than the elections that they've seen in a couple of other states recently, that in fact some of the dominant themes, for example, the issue of corruption, where, you know, it's something which might backfire on them, that it's not something that's worked for them. There's a reputation attached with the government of Karnataka, and that they have to fight back, and that might be tough.
Well, we have a whole month to discuss the various issues, Vishnu. But I like Professor Pani's take on it, that it's not like what conventionally people would think, that it's a tri-cornered contest all across the state. It's going to be several contests at different places, different regions. You asked me about the BJP. I think the party apparently has set a target for 150, which is, I think, about a 30 more than they currently have. And that's quite an ambitious target, as most analysts would say, because the opinion is that there is, like which your other panelists said, that there's an anti-incumbency sentiment against the chief minister and his lackluster governance. Also, the Congress has been pretty active in getting its narrative across, that the BJP has provided only a corruption-ridden governance in the state. The chief minister has had to face the twin attack, you know, of DK Shivkumar and Siddaramaiah, who pull no punches when they attack the current government. And add to that fact that Rahul Gandhi's Bharat Jodo was in Karnataka for several days. It whipped up sentiments. He did help, I think 2 weeks or something, he did, you know, there was like good photographs and coming out, and he is beginning his campaigning too. So whether people get affected by what has happened in Delhi or not, I really doubt, because people in Karnataka, when they go into election mode, it's what affects them the most. And that could be governance issues, that could be farmers issues, it could be social justice, it could be social engineering. So if the Congress makes it into a Modi versus Rahul battle in Karnataka, it will have little resonance among the people. State elections are all about nitty-gritty issues. So there are confusing caste algorithms that come into play, and nobody really wants a messy and shaky coalition other than one political party which benefits from a shaky coalition.
Okay. Rajesh Kalappa, the Aam Aadmi Party looking to make its mark as a national party. Seriously though, do you believe that you have much of a say in Karnataka going forward?
Yeah, Vishnu, it's like this, that as far as the Aam Aadmi Party is concerned, incidentally, we are already a national party. Of course, the recognition is yet to come from the Central Election Commission. But we're already technically a national party, considering that we have got over 6% vote in over four states. We have two governments, and we have five MLAs in Gujarat, two MLAs in Goa with more than 6% of the vote. We have a 14% vote share in Gujarat. Therefore, we already qualify to be a national party. Point is that the ADR survey recently came out with some very startling results. And that is that 46% of the electorate of Karnataka would prefer not to go with any of the entrenched political parties. That means that 46% of the electorate is thinking of, voting somebody else besides the entrenched political parties. This added to the fact that over 40% of the Karnataka electorate lives in either urban or semi-urban areas. Therefore, this is going to have a huge impact.
And that's what the Aam Aadmi Party is looking to sort of get into. Veera Raghav, do they have a hope? Is it hope against hope that somehow those who are not entrenched in the JDS, the Congress or the BJP might go the Aam Aadmi Party way? Because the same rhetoric we heard before Gujarat, where they didn't end up doing that well.
Well, I mean, I think at the moment the narrative doesn't offer any hope, right? But who knows what's happening at the ground root level. Ultimately, an election result will throw out. And as Professor Pani was pointing out, Karnataka is fascinating for this floating population, right? Floating vote bait. Like he was pointing out, the Lingayats originally with the Congress shifted to the Janata movement, and after the disintegration shift to the BJP. There is a battle for the Vokkaliga vote. There is a battle for the other caste combinations that exist. I don't know. You know, one needs to wait and see if there has been a dramatic change in rural India, if there is a dramatic rejection of this kind of traditional caste politics and saying that, look, I want a new option. I don't want this narrative anymore. Then somebody new could make an impact. But at the moment, it doesn't seem like the AAP has some kind of a momentum on the ground.
Okay. Mr. Nasir Hussain, Are you, encouraged by the fact that there is always in Karnataka, certainly for the last several years, no incumbent government returning to power, I believe since 1985. Does that, since 1985, is that something that you're hopeful of, that you'd be able to fill that role in a new government because of past precedent?
Definitely, we are very much confident, and the efforts put in by our leader, Mr. I.P. Kumar Swami, since more than 100 days, the Panch Ratna Yatra, he has visited more than 100 constituencies since 100 days. The enormous support of the Karnatakas towards the Janata secular, we are very much confident that we are going to form the government here in Karnataka. And here, looking at the events in the previous 3 months, the BJP government is trying to polarize, trying to communalize by using all methods, be it the hijab row, be it the azan row, be it the halal cut, be it the recent couple of days before, they have tried to remove the 4% reservation of the minorities and transfer it to the Vikkaligas and the Lingayat. The entire episode shows that the Bharatiya Janata Party has lacked confidence to come to the people to face the elections on the basis of development. This is very much clear that the BJP is trying to polarize, trying to communalize, looking into the fact that the BJP is no more having that support and they have lost the biggest face. That is Mr. B.S. Yediyurappa. It was Mr. B.S.
Yediyurappa. We're going to debate that point.
Was one of the most strongest leaders of the Akalika, and they got 104 states. They could not.
So, Nasir Saab, we'll debate that point.
Him. Minus Yediyurappa.
We'll debate that point. Give me a moment. I need to take a short break.
The ultimate.
But the entire point that you're talking about as far as why you believe that the BJP may not be successful by pushing a Hindutva agenda, how does that actually play out in the politics of Karnataka? I think we need to look more closely at that. That's after this short break. Welcome back. We continue with our deep dive of the Karnataka political situation. May 10th is when the Election Commission has decided that the elections will be held. So, let's go straight across to Mohan Vishwa of the BJP. I think what we were discussing before the break was the impact that a very Hindutva agenda might actually have for the BJP going forward. Now, if you look at this geographically, it's only been areas of coastal Karnataka which have actually seen a particular brand of Hindutva agenda being successful. On this occasion, we've seen a more strident BJP. The entire effort as far as Tipu is concerned, using that to break in to the Vokaliga vote bank. Is the BJP now fully sort of hands-off that you are going to go all out in pursuing a Hindutva agenda in Karnataka?
See, Vishnu, people of Karnataka are witnessing development from past 3.5 years. See, in 3.5 years, 1.5 years went for COVID. We hardly had 2 years. In 2 years, the massive development has been done. Look at the kind of inauguration that has been happening from past 10 months. PM Modi ji visiting our state. To take an example of Bangalore-Mysore Expressway, the foundation was laid down in 2018. The same was inaugurated in 2023. Take an example of Shimoga Airport. The foundation was laid down in 2021. It was inaugurated in 2023. To take an example of the Asia's largest helicopter facility in Tumkur, the foundation was laid down in 2018.
No, so Mohan Vishwa, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but are you therefore trying to, you haven't answered my question. Are you therefore trying to say that development is the agenda as far as the BJP is concerned and not Hindutva at a much larger level than we've seen in the past?
See, Vishnu, development is the main agenda of BJP, the double engine government, both at the center and the state. And the relationship between Hindutva and BJP is very well known to the world. I need not explain it to you again. And Mr. JDS person who is sitting over here, he spoke about communalizing the BJP. Come on, for what sake people of Karnataka, or rather, I can call it as the three district party, which hardly has its presence in three districts, which is called a sub-regional party. So, but please wait, when I'm speaking, when you are talking, I was patiently listening. Okay?
Nasir Saab, I'll come to you next.
Listen to me, Nasir.
Nasir Saab, I'll come to you next. Mohan Vishwa, make your point.
Okay. So he said we were communalizing the issue. I think I made it my point very clear, Vishnu, as far as Hindutva is concerned. But coming back to JDS, what did Mr. Kumaraswamy said when the PFI and SCPI goons were arrested and when PFI was banned, you know what statement he made? He made that instead of banning PFI, you would have arrested only those culprits who were involved in the crime. This is the kind of statement he made. For what sake he made? Is it not a communal statement? But please, please,
Mohan Vishwa, you made your point. Let Nasser, let Mohan Vishwa, one second.
You are a 3-district sub-regional party. You are a 3-district sub-regional party. You know, some of the districts,
okay, all right.
The voters in some of the districts won't even know your party symbol.
All right, we can't hear either of you, Mohan Vishwa. Hold on. Mohan, you got to listen to me now. Nasser Saab, make your point. Go ahead.
Yeah, in Karnataka, it is very much clear. The 40% commission allegation made by the Contractors Association, a MLA from BJP, I am not telling this. A MLA from BJP
More, you can't interrupt now.
Why you are keeping
Let me go across to Professor Narendra Pani as the two of you keep fighting. And Professor Narendra, one second. We don't do things like this. Both gentlemen, wait. Narendra Pani, I was asking them, and perhaps you can give us an answer, your sense of, you know, a hardcore Hindutva agenda political campaign for the BJP. It's only had partial success in the past, some would suggest. Do you believe that that could end up being the dominant narrative for them?
I think it was intended to be their dominant narrative a couple of months ago, at least a few months ago, when the hijab movement was started, the movements towards against halal meat, etc. But they seem to be stepping back from it, partly because, as you pointed out in your introductory comments, it only works in the coast, and even there might be a certain fatigue with it. But Sri Yediyurappa's strength lay in the fact that he could align the BJP with a wider audience. And that's what they are missing now. And when they say that the absence of Yediyurappa will hurt the party, it'll hurt it precisely because that ability to link the party beyond Hindutva is weakened. And the idea of the Vokaliga belt falling for that Hindutva kind of argument against Tipu, for instance, is very difficult because old Mysore was Tipu's capital. He had a Brahmin as his Divan. He had generals who were Hindus. His major enemy was the Nizam, who was a Muslim. So, I mean, it will, as Mr. Kumaraswamy said right at the outset, it's unlikely to strike a chord in that region. So Smita, I would think that right, in practice, they might move back to the development agenda.
Sure. So Smita, where does that leave the BJP in terms of a dominant narrative? You know, on the issue of corruption, it's problematic. Is it the issue of development that they would likely focus on now? Or do you believe that, you know, it's the leadership of Narendra Modi and Amit Shah, we expect both of them to be campaigning extensively, that, you know, Modi trying, you know, ending up being the dominant narrative himself for the BJP in these elections.
You know, Vishnu, when you ask a question like, is Hindutva going to be your agenda to a BJP person, and you think that that question is an accusation or they would feel embarrassed or awkward about that question? No, it's in their DNA. Hindutva is in their DNA. They don't try to separate their character or their political party's character away from Hindutva. That's very much a part of them. As far as electoral politics is concerned, they will use versions of that Hindutva where it suits them. If they are going to a certain region where that Hindutva doesn't strike resonance with the people, they will not talk about it. But they are not going to be embarrassed or awkward or ashamed about their Hindutva-ness, if you want to call it like that, about them. That is part of their culture, and the people who vote for them know that. They know when they are voting for them, whether it's a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian, whoever votes for the BJP, they know that Hindutva comes as part of the package. They're not going to put that aside. So that having been said, BJP will not shy away from using their trump card, which is not Bommai, which is not good governance. That is also going to be there, but their trump card is always going to be Modi.
Right.
In whichever state that they campaign, Modi's campaign is going to be that one thing that they bring, that Brahmastra which they bring, and he will be brought out whenever they think it, they deem it fit. In every district of Karnataka, he will be there. So you can be rest assured that Hindutva will also be there, good governance will also be there, programs will also be there, and Modi and Shah will also be there, and so also Yogi.
And so also Yogi, right.
Look, you've got to just take the past data to understand whether the Prime Minister can pull this through, right, for Karnataka. 36.3% is the vote share the BJP gets in 2018, 50% plus in 2019. They sweep parliamentary elections with 25 seats, but they can't cross a simple majority in an assembly election, right? So the voter is very discerning there. He's voting for a state leadership. For instance, the JDS vote comes to about 20% consistently in the last two elections for the JDS in an assembly election, whereas it drops to 10% in the parliamentary election.
Yeah.
So that vote transfers out to the BJP. So that's number one. The second question, second part of the argument, Vishnu, is it's not new, right? Hindutva isn't new. I just have a slightly different take from Professor Pani there. Hindutva isn't new to Karnataka. You had the Hubli Idgah Maidan issue of Baba Bungari at that time. As he points out, it's the need for alliances that makes Yediyurappa soften down and BJP a more moderate look. Now, that moderate look isn't taking them beyond 112 seats.
Right.
So what's the other narrative that can take them beyond that? Either they need to break through another caste vote. So I think there is a new narrative trying to be made on old foundations. The catering to Yediyurappa and saying, I'm consolidating my old. I'm not letting go of my old, but I really need some new narrative. And I think the party has been searching for that. I think the problem is that you don't have that leader. Right. You don't have that one leader who can lead that campaign and change the narrative in Karnataka. So till that happens, I think the old social coalitions will hold out.
Yeah. Professor Pani, you know, what happens if there's a close election this time around? I know it's premature to be looking at a post-poll alliance situation, but given the fact that we've had the Congress and the JDS ally in the past, given the fact that that alliance broke, the BJP got hold of some of their leaders, given what we've seen in other states, most recently, of course, Maharashtra, how secure are each of these political formations?
I think if the numbers turn out in a way that requires an alliance, there will be alliances. But right now, the JDS would appear to be catering to an audience which is similar to that of the BJP. So I would think right now the alliance between the BJP and the JDS is a more likely formation rather than the JDS and the Congress. Previously, the JDS used to present an image of being closer to the Congress. But right now, I think over the last 2 to 3 years, they have moved extensively, much closer to BJP. The statements made by Mr. Devegowda, their meetings with Prime Minister Modi, various things have happened. And they're generally looking for a public image also, which is closer. And their vote support bases are also similar. They're both dominant caste support bases. And so I would think that's the more likely option rather than a JDS-Congress alliance.
Smita, is that something that you see as well, that the JDS is possibly or will possibly be closer to the BJP in terms of a close election than to the Congress?
No, I don't know, because it's anybody's guess which way the JDS goes and when the numbers actually come. You just cannot predict how Mr. Devegowda will pull his punches, how H.D. Kumaraswamy, and what transpires if and when a situation of a hung assembly comes forward. And frankly, like Veera Raghav said, that, you know, it boils down to that that last day when people go to cast their votes. In Karnataka, nobody really knows, because who really did people vote for in 2018? Yediyurappa forms the government, he loses it.
Yeah.
Kumaraswamy comes in with the Congress, he loses it. We get Yediyurappa, he moves away. Then you get Bommai, and now Yediyurappa is sitting at the back and everybody is going to him. Amit Shah is going to him. His son is being wooed. So really, nobody really knows right now. 1 month, permutations and combinations will happen.
Vishnu, just quick point on that JDS thing. I think the JDS's number one enemy remains Siddaramaiah. I think they are looking at, they are now facing a situation where the BJP is going after them as well at some level. So I think it's going to be a matter of survival. So don't, as Smita is pointing out, I agree with Professor Pani that it seems plausible that a JDS-BJP alliance. I mean, I don't think a JDS would like to be with the Congress, especially the Congress given the nature that it has at the moment of leadership and caste composition. But you never know post-polls what will happen in Karnataka.
All right. Well, let me just put that across to Nasser Saab. Nasser, you had a point over there. Who are you closer to? Or I'm sure your answer will be, I'm winning this election on my own, right?
Yeah, our leader is confident, the entire cadre, entire worker on the ground are confident that we have formed the government on our own. One, number one. Number two, let me make very much clear, the issues, the polarization, communalization politics done by the BJP, the only voice in Karnataka which has stood against the BJP, be it in the matter of hijab, be it the halal cut, be it the Azam issue, every issue, it is the leadership of Mr. Kumar Swamy, who has strongly opposed the Bharatiya Janata Party, and there is no question of Mr. H.D. Kumar Swamy or Janata Dal Secular aligning with the BJP. This is all ifs and buts. We are fighting against both BJP and the Congress. And we are confident that we will form the majority on our own. This is the morale of the workers is very much high in almost around 150 constituencies which the Kumar Swamy is visiting. Let this be very much clear, and you discussing about whether we will go with BJP or whether we will go with Congress. Both the political parties are making statement. The Congress friend makes a statement that we'll go with BJP, and the BJP person will say we'll go to the Congress. Ultimately, they both want to keep their books intact. We are fighting against both the political parties. We are opposed to both the ideologies. We are opposed to both the national political parties. And this
let's record these statements. We'll be recording the statements. It's actually automatically recorded.
Hey, you see, Karnataka is a state where even after the results are out, you don't know who the winner is.
No, exactly.
So I think as far as JDS, only God and Gowda know which side they're going to shift, right?
Mohan Vishwa, you had a point. That's interesting. Mohan Vishwa, you had a point. Go ahead.
See, Vishnu, the problem with the JDS is, like as I said, you know, it got hardly 37 seats and it lost 187 out of 224. Please do remember that. And this time also, you know, I don't think so they crossed more than 20 seats. I will tell you one more reason. See, the people are aware that it's a dynasty.
They have in the previous,
Vishnu, you have to mute his audio, Vishnu. You have to mute his audio.
That will get me into a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah, exactly. No, BJP also had the same number of seats. Family quality. You know, it's a family party. You know, Mr. Devegowda is a Rajya Sabha member. Then H.T. Kumar,
BJP also the same day.
Then Anita Kumar Swamy,
Nasir Saab, let him make his point. Nasir Saab, it really doesn't make sense if everybody talks at the same time.
This is the problem with them. That is why people will not vote for them. As I told you earlier, in most of the districts, people won't even know their symbol. I'm telling you this. They lost 187 out of 224.
No, I think that's over-exaggerating. I think that's over-exaggerating.
No, no, let me continue. See, as I told you, you have Ravana.
Rajesh Kalappa, you had a point to make. Go ahead, sir.
Does BJP have the guts to say that we are giving all the ticket to Assembly?
WhatsApp circulating in Bengaluru. That goes like this. That the results come out on the 13th.
Every district.
And after the 13th.
Nasir Saab, one second. Nasir Saab, hold on. Somebody else is speaking. Brajesh, go ahead. Mr. Kalappa.
Yeah. So, see, the election results are on the 13th. And from 14th onwards, it's the time of going to resorts. This is a WhatsApp which is circulating in Bengaluru.
Brajesh, you're from Coorg. You have many resorts. Brajesh, you're from Coorg. You have many resorts there.
Will then be plied to resorts and then there will be attempts to buy and sell and so on and so forth. So this is already circulating in Bangalore.
All right.
No, Brijesh, actually you can go to resort from today itself because you don't have any base at all in Karnataka.
All right. Okay, look, I'd like to thank all of you for joining us. I'm joined now by Dinesh Kundu Rao of the Congress Party. Thanks very much, sir, for being with us. I'm just trying to understand a little bit about your strategy to field Rahul Gandhi in Kolar itself. You know, I mean, some would suggest, your detractors would suggest that your goal now, politically, is to make Rahul Gandhi into a bit of a martyr, given the conviction that he has had. Is that your goal?
No, are you saying that to make Rahul Gandhi contest in Kolar?
No, that he's going to be he's going to be making his first election rally in Kolar. That's what DK Shiv Kumar said today.
Yeah. He's coming to Kolar on the 5th. There are two reasons for that. One is obviously because the disqualification and the sentencing that has happened was based on his speech in Kolar when he had spoken during the previous parliament election. And now, since we are in election mode in Karnataka, so I think it's a twin strategy of going back to Kolar and speaking what is there exactly in his mind. And also also be part of the election campaign for the Congress in Karnataka. So it's,
no, but is it not? But sir, you're playing it down. The choice of Kolar is important, isn't it? The fact that he got into those remarks where he, you know, said things which...
Exactly.
Which,
so
is that...
So
it's again,
a,
are you...
It's the best place. It's the best place for him to come and again speak exactly what is there in his mind.
Right.
To speak from Kolar. So there are two issues. One is that, which connects to his speech last time when he made, due to which the court has given him a 2-year sentence for the first time, I think, in India's political history, where someone making a speech that and not making a very, not even a very offensive remark gets 2 years imprisonment.
What
and
about,
also, it's yeah. election season, so it's both.
What about DK Shiv Kumar being shown yesterday sort of throwing 500 rupee notes? Is that the sort of politics that you'd like to see in these elections?
See, I think I think he was in his constituency, in his home area, and he has shown been a bit exuberant.
I think
trying to make a big show of something which is not so big. We're not yet in election. I'm just saying that yesterday elections were not announced. Elections have been announced today. So from today onwards, the Code of Conduct comes into play. Till yesterday, giving money spending money is not a crime in itself as long as the money is accounted for. So why make something so big?
Will Mr. Siddaramaiah contest from Kolar?
See, now that Mr. Siddaramaiah has already expressed his view that he will want to contest from two places. One is Varuna, of course. Regarding Kolar, that will be decided by ultimately the CEC. And Varuna, his name has already been cleared. So Kolar, because of the local pressure from Kolar, that all our Congress people are candidates from the surrounding constituencies and all our leaders are putting immense pressure on him to contest from Kolar also. So that final call will be taken by CEC.
All right, that's important and that's interesting. A final call on that matter. Let's see where Mr. Siddaramaiah goes. You had a question, Veera Raghav.
No, the Kolar was the question that I had. Will he get? The question is that if he's going to be given a second seat, where does it stop? Does it stop with him? Will he be given that special treatment, which is sort of declaring
yes.
that he is the chief ministerial face?
Is he the chief ministerial face?
See, Mr. Siddaramaiah is definitely one of the faces for our election. He is the most popular leader in Karnataka today, cutting across all political parties. And the popular face or the mass leader in BJP was Mr. Yeddyurappa. Since he is no more in the political fray in terms of becoming a chief minister or not even contesting elections, he's out of the picture. So the one man who's got the biggest mass following in Karnataka is Mr. Siddaramaiah. And of course, we have DK Shivakumar and many, many other leaders who are there. So the ultimate choice of who is going to be chief minister will be decided by the legislature party and in consultation with the high command. So we're not naming any person as the chief ministerial face. But of course, Mr. Siddaramaiah is one of the faces for our election campaign.
You know, the Karnataka cabinet's decision to remove that 4% quota, reservations and jobs and educational institutions for Muslims under the OBC quota, it seems to indicate that it's going to be a fairly strident Hindutva agenda, going forward in these elections. If that is the case, is it something that concerns you in Karnataka?
This is the agenda that has been being driven since the last 1 year, or even to say 2 years also. The comments that the BJP leaders have been making, whether it was on the hijab issue or even the Tipu Sultan issue and trying to make it Tipu versus Savarkar. And the BJP national state president himself very clearly said, why you want to talk about development and what we have done? We should only concentrate on communal issues. So it's very clear that that is BJP's strategy to, you know, polarize the voter. But I feel in Karnataka today, the people have also wisened up. They know that these gimmicks and these distractions are not going to work. They have seen one of the most corrupt governments in the history of Karnataka's politics. Yesterday, I was hearing Prime Minister Narendra Modi speaking about corruption, and he comes to Karnataka every second day, and his government is the most corrupt government in the country. So Mr. Modi says all these nice sounding words in his speeches, but what's he doing about his own government here in Karnataka? So people have seen it, and no amount of saying that we are clean or we are good is going to work. So these communal issues will not work. And whether it is that, whether this 4% reservation, this is illegal. How can someone, how can a cabinet subcommittee report remove a 4% reservation which has been given based on the backward classes commission's report?
All right.
You know, this will ultimately go to court. And this entire reservation that has been given will be scrapped finally because it is violating on many fronts. On the Indira Sawhney case, Supreme Court judgment front, on the way reservations have been, done, removing the Muslims, giving it to Okaligas and Lingayat, and doing the internal reservation for SCs. All these things are ultimately going to be struck down by the court. So nothing of this is actually going to come into effect.
All right. Well, we'll see, Mr. Gundurao, where exactly it goes, what the road ahead is. But it's going to be a very hectic month going forward. I'd like to thank you
very
much.
We are very confident of the state. Yeah.
Could you give us a number that you think you're going to, and then we'll hold you to it.
I myself am contesting an election. This will be my sixth election, and I won the last five times. And I can feel the buzz on the ground. When we are going to people who are traditionally voting.
Where do you think
BJP
the Congress is going to be placed in terms of numbers? You were at what, 78 last time around?
I would say we were 70, we were 80 last time, and we will definitely have an absolute majority. I can see a number in the range of 125 to 130 because people want a stable government and people want a good government. And I think the swing is going to increase for the Congress party, and we're going to get an absolute majority.
All right. We'll leave it over there. Thanks very much, sir, for being with us. Veera Raghav, great to have you. We are going to be tracking the Karnataka situation very, very closely indeed over the next several weeks. But for now, from all of us here on the Left, Right and Center team, good night.